The spirit of performance is what defines Acura. And now, it's electric. Introducing the ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Inside the Huddle. It's Hoosier Huddle's pregame show for this week's matchup, Indiana versus Michigan in Memorial Stadium in Bloomington. We'll have all the coverage you need. It is senior day. I can't believe it is senior day. The year has gone by so quickly. Indiana has three games left. They come in at 4-5, 0-5 in the Big Ten. Michigan is 7-2. And 4-1 in the Big Ten. So a lot at stake for both teams. Indiana needs a win to avoid a six-game losing streak and keep their bowl hopes alive. Michigan is right there in the division fight for the Eastern Division. So a lot at stake for both teams. It should be a slobber knocker. Michigan is one of the best defenses in the country. We're going to welcome in our co-host, TJ Inman. TJ, how are you today?
I'm doing well, Sammy. How are you doing?
I'm doing excellent. It's a little chilly, but, you know, that's what happens at the end of the football season.
Yes. Yeah, unfortunately, we are we're winding down. We're getting into the middle of fall, kind of looking towards winter. I love basketball, but It's difficult to get towards the end of the football season because we know what's coming when this ends, and that's a long off season.
Yeah, it's an off season where we start a countdown, and all too quickly the season's over. TJ, you know, I was saying before we brought you on, it's a big game kind of for both teams. You know, Michigan's trying to stay keep pace with Ohio State and Michigan State in the division. And Indiana needs to break a six-game losing streak and get back in the win column and get to that, you know, fifth and sixth wins coming up. What are your first impressions of the game?
Yeah, it's a big game for both teams for different reasons. You know, Michigan, I think a lot of people kind of view them as at this point, after they lost to Michigan State, kind of thought, well, you know, they're clearly – improved. It's a good story for college football as a whole, as a national story. You know, it's good for the Big Ten to have one of the marquee programs back at a high level, but that their time as a national factor this season is over. But that loss to Michigan State actually does not take them out of the running for the Big Ten East title. It likely takes them out of the playoff picture. There'd have to be a lot of crazy things happen for them to get back into that. But if they win out, so that includes a win over Ohio State, and Michigan State loses, likely that loss would be to Ohio State, but if they were to lose a second game, since they lost to Nebraska, so if they were to lose a second game, you know, Michigan would be the Big Ten East champ. And that would put them in the Big Ten title game. And at the very least, they'd be looking at a Rose Bowl berth, which is, you know, far exceeds expectations of any Michigan fan before the season. So, you know, a big game for them. And even if those dominoes don't fall their way, they're still looking in contention here for, you know, right now, I'm seeing them projected in the Citrus Bowl for the most part, playing somebody like Florida. So a loss or two more probably takes them out of one of those New Year's bowls, one of those New Year's Day bowls. So I think that's probably their goal right now, is to win out. And, you know, obviously beating Indiana does that. You know, for IU, it's really just about stopping the landslide, which, you know, it's really tough to put this into context, because yes, Indiana has lost six in a row. That doesn't feel good at all. I would say that really only two of those games, though, you can consider bad performances, and only one of them would be one that you can't explain. I mean, the loss to Penn State, IU was just without their offensive weapons, and that was a good defense that played a good game against the Hoosiers. That can be explained. The Rutgers game cannot. But, you know, the other games, I think you largely have to be fairly positive about them. You know, I know that the football team cannot accept moral victories, and I totally get that, and I'm not into moral victories either, but I can still take positives out of performances. And, you know, you look at the teams that IU has lost to in this six-game winning streak outside of Penn State and Rutgers, you're talking about top 15 teams. You're talking about Michigan. They haven't lost yet, but that's another top 15 opponent coming up. Iowa is now fifth in the country, which is truly mind-boggling. You know, Michigan State, despite their loss to Nebraska, is still in the top 15. Ohio State is in the top four. So you're looking at really high-quality opponents. This IU schedule has turned out to be much tougher than I think anyone anticipated as we headed into things. But the big picture being, you need to get to that six wins, schedule or not. You need to get to six wins, and this is one of the three final opportunities that they have to do that. They got to win two games. We all know the scenarios. You know, at Maryland and at Purdue is after this. This is your last chance to win a game at home. That being said, just at first glance, this is a game that features Indiana as the biggest underdog they've been all season, just by point spread numbers. They were a less of an underdog against Ohio State than they are against Michigan, at least when that game ended up kicking off. So that's just, we don't know what the point spread's going to end up being, and we don't, you know, not endorsing gambling or anything, but it is an interesting way to put the game into context. I think a lot of that is due to, number one, this is a dominant defense, and we'll get into the specifics on that, but this, I don't think they're the best defense in the country. I think that there are a couple of defenses that are a little bit more talented, but just from a pure scheme plus talent standpoint, Michigan is one of the best defenses in the country. They're extremely good against the run, very good against the pass, and they have some really dynamic athletes like Jabril Peppers, who we'll talk about later, that can change the game on you. They're very sound at tackling, very sound fundamentally in their positioning. They just don't really allow hardly any big plays, and they're extremely good at getting off the field on third down. That's the second best team in the country, which I guess, you know, spoiler, that's going to be one of my keys to the game, is third down. But I think that that's a reason that you see this kind of the large underdog that IU is heading into this game, is because of Michigan's elite defense, plus an offense that I would say is emerging. They're certainly not a great offense, but Jake Rudock has gotten more comfortable. He's doing a much better job now of taking care of the ball. So they're not turning it over as much as they were at the start of the season. They have a pretty good rushing attack, I would say competent passing attack, with a guy that has emerged as probably the best tight end in the Big Ten in Jake Butt, which is going to be a tough matchup for Indiana to line up with him, because he's a very big target. I think you're going to see some linebackers have to cover him. And so far this season, Indiana's been able to do pretty well against tight ends, but I think that Jake Butt is going to be the toughest challenge that they've had from that position. And I think that, unfortunately, there's going to be a lot of Michigan fans in the crowd, because Jim Harbaugh he's really rallied the fan base to the point that I think that they are traveling really well. I think they're very proud of how they've performed this season and where they think that this program is headed. So I would expect that there's going to be quite a bit of maize and gold or maize and blue in Memorial Stadium. So I think you look at those factors, and it's understandable why people would expect Michigan to kind of come in and route the Hoosiers and force IU to win back-to-back road games to get to a bowl game.
Yeah, and you know, piggybacking off of that, you know, the Big Ten East is absolutely brutal. And,
yeah,
you know, at first I was like, you got to play the best to be the best. But it's been absolutely brutal. You know, you play Michigan State, Michigan, Penn State, Ohio State every year. And then you get crossed over. I think next year IU's crossover games are Purdue, Northwestern, and Nebraska. And Northwestern looks to be on the rise again. And Nebraska is, well, we'll see. They could be, you know, we'll see if they're the Nebraska of old. Or is this a Nebraska who's just a middle-tier team in the Big Ten now? But it is absolutely brutal playing in the Big Ten East and playing those teams every year. And I know it's frustrating losing, but as you said, TJ, they've played, I think this is their fourth top 15 team. This is, you know, these are games that IU is not supposed to win more than like once a decade. I mean, IU's beat Michigan once since 1967. That came in 87. So Michigan has won 34 of the last 35 games against Indiana. Indiana has beaten Penn State once ever. They haven't beaten Ohio State since 1988. And, you know, now you're looking at, you haven't beaten Michigan State in almost a decade either. So it is really brutal, and it's tough on the fans. And I know you like seeing these teams come in, but, you know, the fans got to realize that, hey, I remember the days that these teams would come in and hang 65, and it'd be 65-10 or 66-10 and something like that. But, you know, it is senior day. They are, I know people are sick of it, but they're really close. And maybe this is the game they put it all together and get over the hump. It would be fitting to send this senior class out like this. It would be a signature win in Nate Sudfeld's career, in these seniors' careers. So, you know, it's going to be tough. There are going to be a lot of Michigan fans down there. This Jim Harbaugh has, as you said, rejuvenated the fan base and the program. So we'll see. TJ, you mentioned Jabril Peppers. He's a redshirt freshman. A lot of us picked him as our Big Ten Freshman of the Year. What do you see from Michigan that's going to give IU trouble besides, you know, that defense?
Yeah, well, just talking specifically about Jabril Peppers, he's a guy that is playing primarily safety. He was for those that aren't aware or don't follow recruiting, which I totally understand, but Peppers is a guy that had a ton of hype surrounding him when he committed to Michigan before Harbaugh was hired. He committed to Brady Hoke and then obviously stayed on board for Harbaugh. He has played primarily safety. He's also played some corner on the boundary side. And then they have really just recognized that he's a dynamic athlete that they need to get on the field. So he is also now a returner for special teams. And they have increasingly played him on the offensive side of the ball as, you know, throwing him a bubble screen, which they did against Rutgers, and he had a very impressive touchdown run. You know, Rutgers read the bubble screen pretty perfectly. They were in the, behind the line of scrimmage very quickly. It looked like they had busted the play up, but Peppers just made them miss and accelerated quickly, got to the end zone. They've also given him a few handoffs on jet sweeps, so they're just trying to get the ball into his hands.
He has three catches for around 38 yards. He's also carried the ball for six times for two touchdowns, only 13 yards. He was taken, or 24 yards, sorry. So he's taken down for a loss a couple times. And then in punt returns, he's pretty dangerous as well at 12.3 yards in on an average kick. TJ, I think you're – and he also does kickoff returns at 27.9. When you have depth like Michigan does, that's the things you could do. And I think I know where you're going in that he reminds him of Charles Woodson a little bit.
Yes, yeah, that's the name that I was about to say. I didn't see Charles Woodson really play in college, so I can't say that he reminds me of Charles Woodson, but the name that Michigan fans that have watched the program for a long, long time, the name that they compare this guy to is Charles Woodson, and they're all fairly convinced that he's the most dynamic overall playmaker that they've had in Ann Arbor since Charles Woodson. So that's high praise indeed, because they've had a lot of good players since Charles Woodson. And Woodson, you know, obviously tremendous player that is still making plays in the NFL. But I'm worried about Jabril Peppers just because this Indiana team has struggled to tackle on the outside. Not all the time, but sometimes they do. If you make mistakes tackling against Jabril Peppers, he's going to, if he gets that open space, he's going to score a touchdown. He's not a huge guy by any means. Obviously, he's a corner, he's safety, so he's not real big, but he is incredibly shifty. He's very dangerous with the ball, so if you miss tackles, he can change the game. And then defensively, he's turned into a very good coverage safety that helps this Michigan secondary. You know, they have a very good pair of safeties, actually. I think that from a just defensive standpoint, I actually think Jared Wilson is a better defensive player than Jabril Peppers is. He's not as explosive of an athlete, but he is, I think, more of a better pure safety. Jabril Peppers, almost like a third corner, which we've seen Alabama has done this season as well. Their safeties are, both of their safeties actually, are defensive backs. They're not traditional safeties, and that's partially due to Alabama's dominant front seven. They don't need the help from the safeties against the run, but it's a way that you're seeing coaching staff start to cope with these spread offenses. Safeties are more coverage guys now that are pretty much defensive backs or corners that are playing safety, and I think that's kind of what you're seeing with Michigan, is that Wilson is a very good defensive player. Jabril Peppers, very good coverage safety. So those guys, plus, you know, they have a very good duo of linebackers, Desmond Morgan and Joe Bolton, and a couple of defensive linemen, Chris Wormley and Willie Henry, that are disruptive guys. They both have more than six tackles for loss. So it's very important for Indiana to not allow those two to create negative plays, because you get behind the chains against this Michigan defense and they know you have to do something. So they know what's coming. Like, if they know a pass is coming because they forced you into a 3rd and 12, you're in trouble. You're probably not going to convert that 3rd down. If you can keep them off balance, which Minnesota did extremely well. I was very impressed with Minnesota's offense 2 weeks ago. It's by far the best game any offense has had against Michigan's defense, which is really crazy because Minnesota's offense has largely been underwhelming this season. But against Michigan, they were really phenomenal. Had 461 yards. What they did so well was they kept them off balance. They were able to run the ball for over 4 yards a rush, and Mitch Leidner was able to throw for more than 300 yards. And what was able to come off of that successful rushing attack, which Michigan's not used to this year, teams have not been able to run the ball on them, but it got them a little bit back on their heels and allowed Leidner some open passing lanes that most teams have not had. So I think it's going to be a key for Indiana to stick to the running game, even if it's not working at any point in the game. If it's in the first quarter, if you're not generating the kind of rushing attack that you'd like to have, don't panic. You have to stick with the run. You have to stick with Jordan Howard, because if you abandon that and just go into a passing attack because you fall down by 7 points or 10 points, I don't see any way that they're going to consistently move the ball. You've got to be balanced against this defense.
Yeah, and that's something that, you know, we didn't see last week against Iowa. You know, Indiana ran the ball very well, but then the passing game wasn't there. And then, you know, you saw it against Rutgers where the passing game was there, but the running game wasn't there. I mean, they broke off a couple big runs, but they didn't, you know, get the run game going like it is with Jordan Howard there. And not having Howard for Rutgers is probably the reason why they lost as well. But, TJ, this offense needs to get going. You know, I know you were very harsh on the receivers dropping the balls. I rewatched some of that game from Saturday. Yeah, the receivers dropped six, but, man, Sudfeld was leading them into crossing routes where they might have had their get decapitated on some hits. So, you know, it's a little bit both. You got to put the ball where your receivers aren't going to get killed or aren't going to, you know, lift their head up and look over their shoulder as, you know, a linebacker or a safety is going to come in and clean their clock. So it's really on Nate Sudfeld. Now, I think the weather is going to be nice on Saturday. It might be cold, but, you know, we saw it last week. He was just off. There was no real – the wind shouldn't have been a factor. It wasn't wet. It was just, you know, it got cold, and – I don't know if it was a mechanical issue. Whatever it was, Sudfeld told me on Monday that it was correctable. But, you know, he's got to get going. And he's got to play like these are the last three games of his college career because they are. Yeah, he's only, you know, he's never started more than 8 games in a season. So he'll break it, you know, if he starts this week, which he should, it'll break his career high for starts. And, yes, he is a young quarterback in terms of games played, but he's got to play like a senior this week. It is senior day, and this team needs a win and needs a good performance. So I'm going to put, you know, we'll go into keys to the game a little bit more, but my key to the game is Sudfeld's performance. You've got to perform like you're a senior who's on top of the list of touchdown passes for Indiana.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's very fair, and you're right about the Iowa game. You know, Sudfeld did not put his receivers in the best positions, and they did not help him out all that often. It was definitely a two-way street there with the passing performance. I thought the second half was better from Sudfeld. I thought the first half he was very off. The second I thought was a little bit better. That it was more receiver drops in the second half that really cost them. In the first half, I thought maybe upon rewatching, I was a little bit too harsh on the receivers for their first half troubles. That was more on Sudfeld, putting them into tough positions for the most part. But it ultimately doesn't really matter. It needs to be, you know, they have to be in sync. They have to be working as a tandem. And for the most part this year, that has happened, but it did not last Saturday. And against a defense like Michigan, if you're inaccurate, it's probably going to result in, one, a three and out, or two, a turnover, because they're not going to give you very big passing lanes or windows, if you will. So you're going to have to really fit it into some tight spaces. There are going to be opportunities. I mean, no offenses can just completely shut down every opportunity. So there will be things there for the taking. It's just a matter of whether or not Nate Sudfeld and this group of receivers can execute when those opportunities are available, because the difference between, you know, a really good defense and a mediocre defense is just how many opportunities are there. Michigan does not give you a lot of them, but there will be some that are there for the taking. So we'll see if Sudfeld's able to do that in his final home game. It'd be really awesome to see if he could have a really nice performance against the defense that stacks up with just about anybody. I think Clemson and Alabama might be a little bit better than this Michigan group, but they're they're as good as just about anybody in the country. So it'd be good to see Sudfeld. It would give you a boost of confidence going into the final two games of the season, which will not be against good defenses.
Yeah, and, you know, those two games at the end of the year, we'll get into them more after this week, but they've been kind of the saving grace of this season. You know, Indiana's on a, as I said a million times before today, a six-game losing streak. Those games, I think, are there, have really saved Kevin Wilson's bacon right now, is because they are two winnable games. But getting back to Michigan, they have 24 sacks on the year. So the offensive line will have its work cut out for them. And if they can't protect Sudfeld, it's over. That's going to, you know, impact that passing game. It'll impact the run game. They also have, I believe, 65 tackles for loss. That's going to be huge, too. And Jordan Howard very rarely gets tackled for a loss. So we'll see that matchup. TJ, what are some other keys to the game that you have?
Well, you know, I hinted at this earlier. Third downs are going to be – they're always crucial. And I thought that IU showed some improvements in third down last week. They went 8 for 17 against Iowa, who had come into the game as a very good defense against against offenses on third down. Michigan's even better than that. They come into this game at second in the country in third down conversion defense. They're behind only Clemson. They surrender a first down at only 21.8% of third downs. Just to put that into some context, IU's allowing a first down on 45.2% of third downs, which is 110th in the country. So you're looking at second versus 110th. And a difference of, you know, almost 24%, which over the course of a game, that's probably going to be maybe three or four first downs, and that's probably the difference of 7 to 10 points, something like that, based just on third down defense. So that's obviously a huge factor. On the other side of the ball, Michigan's converting 42% of third downs on offense. That's 42nd. Indiana only at 38.2% of third downs, which is 80th. And I think not having Jordan Howard, I haven't done this, but I should go into the numbers of what IU's third down conversion rate is with Jordan Howard. It's still not as good as it should be with the grouping that they have and the coaching staff that they have. It's not as high as it should be, but I think that it is a significant difference when Howard's in there on third down as opposed to Divine Redding being the third down back. So, Indiana, like I said, 8 of 17 against Iowa last week. They're going to need a similar performance on Saturday, maybe even slightly better, to be able to keep the ball. Number one, it keeps your defense on the bench and just continues to rest them. That was an issue against Iowa that and really against pretty much every top-level opponent Indiana has played this year, is the defense just gets worn out. Because they're losing the time possession battle, converting third downs or stopping the opponent from converting third downs are obviously key factors in swinging that time of possession battle. And then I think what I'd also like to see is better use of third down and medium passing. I'd like to see some more of the quick outs to Simi Cobbs. I think that those have been successful this year. I think he's proven, you know, he had a couple of drops last week, but I think for the most part he has proven he's very capable of running that route for 78 yards. He just goes, you know, just go 2 yards past the first down marker, foot in the ground, turn around, screen off the defender, and Sudfeld's got a window to put that there. Most corners in college are unable to stop that consistently. So I'd like to see some more of that, or maybe some of those, you know, bootleg delays where the tight end is blocking and then, you know, kind of pops off. Michael Cooper had a couple of those. Corsaro's had a few of those. So I'd like to see some of that. But and then third down, the defense for Indiana just, I don't know how at this point. I just don't know how. I know they need to get more pressure on the quarterback when they get an opponent into they've been pretty good, really, on third and short as a defense. But on those third and medium to third and long, it's always a problem. It's been a problem again this season. I don't know if it's trying to get more pressure. I know that they should do that, but then you're exposing your coverage. I don't know what the answer is, but they need to find something, not just Saturday, but the final 3 weeks, because being 110th in the country, allowing a first down almost half the time when opponents have a third down, that's you just can't win that way.
Yeah, and I think it is a lack of pressure on those third and mediums and third and longs, because you let Rudock sit back there last week and pick apart the defense. And
Bethard.
I'm sure if you go back, Bethard, Rudock, you know, it's Iowa. Rudock
it could
is
be Rudock
in Michigan
this week.
Yeah. So, you know, Bethard, I think, is a little bit more mobile than Rudock, but you saw him just sit back there, extend the play for an extra second, and then they hit, a long pass, and it is frustrating. TJ, my key of the game is red zone scores. Red zone percentage in Michigan is hitting at 95% in the red zone. They've been there 38 times. They've scored 36 times, 27 of those being touchdowns. So they're scoring touchdowns 71% of the time. I don't know the national average, but that's pretty darn good, especially when you look at last year's numbers, and they were barely in the red zone. So, Indiana's defense, you got to keep them out of scoring territory. Yeah, you could give up yards, but buckle down, from the 30 on out, and try and force them into field goals. Now, their field goal kickers hit 12 of 15, which is it's pretty good. But let them kick it. If it's 3 points is better than giving up seven. But Indiana's going to have to step up their red zone game as well. Let me bring up their stats real quickly on their red zone tries. It's really, we've seen it last week where, they got down into scoring position and settled for two field goals, and that was the difference in the game. Now, you can't rely on your offense to be perfect like that, but
right.
You got to take advantage, and maybe, I hate saying just go for seven, but in a game like this, you might have to, if it's a manageable distance, I'm not saying if it's fourth and 18 from the 30-yard line, just go ahead and take the points and kick it. But Indiana is hitting it at 92%. They're 33 of 36, but they only have 23 touchdowns in the red zone. They have They're 23 of 36. They score touchdowns 64% of their time. That's the stat that's got to change. Is you got to get that touchdown number up into the 70s in percentage wise. And if you sit there, because field goals, 3 points, that's almost two scores or over two scores for a touchdown. And Indiana has let up a lot of touchdowns. So we'll see how they do on that.
Yeah, I think that you bring up a good point on red zone. You can't expect perfection from your offense, that's true. You shouldn't expect perfection from the offense. You shouldn't expect a touchdown every time you're in the red zone. That's not realistic. But, when your defense struggles the way that Indiana has, you do have to have perhaps unrealistic expectations for your offense just to succeed. And that's unfortunate, but that's kind of the situation Indiana's in with the way their defense continues to struggle. Seemingly, we say this, if we'd had this podcast 3 seasons ago or 4 seasons ago or however many seasons ago, we'd be having the same discussion. Like, the offense has to be held to a higher standard than perhaps is fair just because of the defensive struggles, and it's an entire team. So, as a whole, the offense has to perhaps perform at a higher level than you should be expecting them to perform at just to get there. But being in the 60s, it is too low of a number. A team that has the offensive weapons that Indiana does, and for Kevin Johns and Kevin Wilson to very bright offensive minds, I think that they'd be the first to tell you that being in the 60s is not acceptable. Generally speaking, I'd say that if you're anywhere above 70 and get into the mid-70% of touchdowns in per red zone attempts, you're going to be pretty pleased. I think that that's going to be important. I will say that it was very nice to see Griffin Oaks last week inject some confidence back into the kicking game. That was good to have him have a bounce back after the bye week, after a pretty frustrating day in East Lansing. It was good to see him knock in two that were really no doubters. So at least you have some confidence in your kicker if you do have to kick it on Saturday against Michigan.
Yeah, and he's a very good kicker, arguably the best in the Big Ten, and you know, you just hope that Michigan State was an off day and that it didn't affect him mentally, and it doesn't look like it did. Switching sides of the ball, TJ, my second key to the game is get some pressure in the backfield. Indiana mm-hmm. had no sacks last week. I think they had 5 tackles for loss for like 7 yards, so that average was not good on yards per tackle for a loss. Get into the backfield. You know, they do a bad job of disguising blitzes. And the defense, this defensive line, who has been touted at the beginning of the season, mainly, you know, by our Indiana writers, including ourselves, they got to start playing up to their potential. You know, Darius Latham's got to get – he's played well, but he's got to get into the backfield. Zach Shaw's come on of late. But then, you know, Nick Mangieri was hot for a while. Now he's cooled off. And hopefully now that, you know, these last 3 games, they can put it all together again and get hot at the same time. Ralph Green has got to step up. He only has 1 sack and 3 TFLs. One guy who had big expectations coming in as a sophomore, Nate Hoff, has 4 total tackles, no sacks, no tackles for a loss, and he plays a lot. So, you know, these guys have got to step up. They've got to do, you know, the best that they can to get into the backfield, get some pressure on Rudock, and, you know, set up some – I know 3rd and longs have been a bugaboo, but set up some 3rd and 17s, 3rd and 18s. Get into these situations where you can bring a blitzer and disguise it better. But, you know, Ralph Green, Nate Hoff, some other guys, Darius Rainer only has 1.5 tackles for loss, no sacks. He was a guy that they sent to media days as a senior. He had big expectations. Nick Mangieri has played well, but he hasn't had a sack in a couple weeks. He's sitting at 7 sacks, 8 tackles for a loss. So, you know, this defensive line, some of the linebackers, TJ Simmons should be back. It was a first half ejection, so he should be back ready to go for the entire game next week or this week. But, man, they got to get pressure in the backfield, TJ.
Yeah, they definitely do. One guy that I do want to point out that I've been impressed with on the defensive side of the ball the past couple of weeks, or at least the past couple of games, he's getting some more playing time. Robert McCray, his athleticism, I think, is kind of the reason he was initially getting into the mix, and then he's actually backing that up with production. He's just doing a good job of getting himself around the ball. It's not manifested into huge stats to this point, but he's not played a ton of snaps either. So, you know, he's still a relatively inexperienced college football player, but his, more than anything, just his activity level, and that he continues to find himself around the ball and not just when the ball is 20 yards down the field, but around the line of scrimmage.
Yes,
so that's a positive point.
Yeah, and spot on McCray. He's played in 7 games and has, you know, 3 tackles for a loss and 11 total tackles. So when he's played, he's been productive, and he's been a bright spot for Indiana on that defense recently. But you look at, you know, Chase Dutra has 3 tackles for a loss. When he's, you know, when your big defensive tackle has the same amount of tackles for losses as safety, that's not a good sign. And it's the safety that's played 7 games. And I know Green missed that first game, but you got to get something done. Now, the defense has done a decent job of knocking down the ball at the line of scrimmage. I think they had three or four last week, maybe five. You know, Zach Shaw, Nick Mangieri, and Darius Latham have all done a good job of getting their hands up when you can't get to the quarterback. So, but eventually you're going to have to get to the quarterback at some time. And, you know, it's not doesn't have to be every time, and you shouldn't expect it to be every time. But, you know, just a little bit more often than it has been. TJ, what is your second key to the game?
Just a point on Michigan's emerging offense, really. And kind of they're not great by any means, but they are up to 27th in the S&P Plus rankings. Jake Rudock is now completing almost 63% of his passes that he had. Like I mentioned earlier, they're doing a better job of taking care of the ball. I think he's just much more comfortable. Maybe he was pressing a little bit early as his, you know, his new school, trying to prove to people after, you know, he was pretty much just let go by Iowa. And I think it's ended up working out for both schools. But maybe early on he was attempting to press and kind of make the Iowa coaching staff regret letting him go. So he was making some bad decisions. Michigan stuck with him. And they've been rewarded because he's taking better care of the ball. He's distributing it. They've got Jake Butt. They also have a couple wide receivers, Amara Darbo and Jehu Chesson. Both of them are capable of making big plays. So it's going to be important for Indiana to limit those big plays from Michigan. But it's going to be the guys they look for on a lot of their third downs where, you know, Indiana's had so much trouble getting off the field. And then they've got a solid running game. They use a lot of different running backs. Ty Isaac, Devian Smith is going to be the main running back. But have a hard time feeling confident that Indiana's going to be able to effectively control any opposing offense right now. I thought that the defense was actually pretty solid against Iowa. I thought it was an improvement for that unit. They weren't great, but I wasn't expecting great at any point this season. So I thought that there were some good improvements. We saw some different personnel get on the field. Tony Fields got a lot more snaps coming out of the bye week. Robert McCray got more snaps coming out of the bye week. It hurt not having Simmons for that second half. There's no doubt about that. He's had a good season, and it hurt not having him on the field. But this is going to be a good test for Indiana's defense, not because Michigan's some great offense, but I do think that they are much better than what they showed at the start of the season, which is expected with the new coaching staff. You know, the more time you get with them, the better you're going to be and the more familiar you're going to be. I think that it's important for Indiana to try. I think a magic number to think is if you can hold these guys somewhere in the 20s, so somewhere like 24 to 28 points, if you can hold them there, I think you will feel like you have a chance to win the game. If Michigan gets up into the 30s, I'm not sure Indiana's or any team right now is capable of putting up over 30 on this Michigan defense.
Yeah, and this game it's going to be a slobber knocker. We'll see. Finally, TJ, my final key to the game is turnovers. Indiana started out like gangbusters on with turnovers in the beginning of the year. They've kind of slowed down. They have had two turnovers in the last three games since Rutgers. They picked off a pass at Rutgers. They recovered a weird fumble at Michigan State on a botched field goal. But that's something that needs to come alive again and get this offense the ball in great field position and turn those turnovers into points. That's something that has been lacking. TJ, is that your final key of the game as well, or do you have something different?
I did not have any additional ones. I think turnovers are a good point. I included that as kind of part of my little spiel on Michigan's defense, but yeah, Indiana's offense has done a nice job of taking care of the ball the entire season. That has never been a problem this year, and that's good. Turnovers have really bit in teams repeatedly, and it's the reason that they lose games. Indiana can't say that. They've done a nice job, but they don't have to say that, I should say. They've done a nice job of taking care of the ball, but like you said, the defense has stopped creating those turnovers, which part of that's to be expected. They were never going to continue to take the ball away from their opponent at the rate that they were early on in the season. That was a pace that could not be sustained. But you do expect to occasionally create some. And Rudock, like I have mentioned a couple times, has done a better job, but he has thrown 7 interceptions. He does not have the most accurate arm. He's pretty accurate, 63% of his passes, but you know, 7 picks with the number of attempts that he typically has in a game, that's not great for him. So the opportunity is there, and then you know, you can always force some fumbles. Marcus Oliver is incredibly good at that. You know, the ball just has to bounce the right way, and you've got to recover it. Indiana had a chance for that onside kick against Iowa, just you know, didn't quite bounce the right way. It squirted out, not necessarily onside kick. Hopefully you don't have to rely on that, but those types of bounces, when the ball is there to be had, when it's a 50-50 ball, some of it's luck, some of it, most of it really is luck, but you've just got to find a way to make a couple of those plays. And if Michigan presents you with an opportunity and you do get a turnover, you got to cash them in for points.
Yeah, and don't be surprised, you know, to see an onside kick that's not a
right.
desperation heave at the end of the game. Kevin Wilson has been, I hate the term riverboat gambler because it's so overused, but he's been, you know, rolling the dice a little bit with these onside kicks in his career at Indiana. And, you know, you could tell sometimes it is an option given to Griffin Oakes, and he's been very good at it. So we'll
yeah.
see if, you know, maybe after a score and Indiana has all the momentum to try and get that ball back and get 2 scores in a row. So we'll see. You know, he opened the game at Rutgers last year with an onside kick. I think either North Texas or the opener, they had an onside kick after a touchdown. So we'll see. TJ, let's go around the conference. There aren't too many great games. I think Indiana-Michigan might be the best game on the slate.
It might be. I think Ohio State-Illinois is very interesting as well, just because Josh Ferguson's back for Illinois and their offense has been so much better with him than it was without him. He's not the same type of player as Jordan Howard, but think of it in that same effect. You know, IU's offense just operates much better with Howard, and Illinois' offense operates much better with Ferguson. So that's an interesting game. They played at noon on ABC. JT Barrett back in the starting lineup. Cardale Jones did not do enough against Minnesota to even make the coaches think about giving him additional snaps.
So sorry for the pun, TJ. Would you say that JT Barrett is back in the driver's seat?
Oh yeah, but very nice. Yeah,
I'll be here all week.
That is good. That's a good one.
Yeah, and they play for one of my favorite trophies in the Big Ten. It's the Illibuck. It was originally a live turtle or tortoise. They picked the tortoise because it lived the longest. I don't think the live tortoise lasted more than a year. You know, talk about your ironies, but it's kept by the students. They pass it down the stands and when the team's, you know, when the game happens. It's, you know, something unique to college football. And I absolutely love the Illibuck Trophy. I wish the series was a little bit closer. But, yeah, that's a good game, a noon game. Next we have Maryland at Michigan State. Michigan State's trying to bounce back from that, you know, awful loss to Nebraska, where I still think that was a bad call, but the Big Ten says what it said. So it was a good call.
I agree.
So we'll see. And Maryland's just trying to get out of the season alive, I think. You know, they put up a good fight last week against Wisconsin, but, you know, they already fired their coach. They're 2-1 what are they, 2-7 now?
Yes.
And you know, it's going to wear down on them going up to East Lansing.
Yeah, the interesting thing with this game, there's really not storyline-wise. You just have Michigan State trying to avoid that second loss so that they can, you know, if they win out, they win the Big Ten East, and I think if they can win in Columbus, you'll see them rocket back up the college football playoff standings, and, you know, they could still have an opportunity to get two wins over two top five teams. I don't think they're good enough to do that, but, you know, the opportunity is still there, and that's what they're playing for. If nothing else, then they could find themselves in a New Year's Day Bowl, which is, you know, pretty good. Nothing to sneeze at. But from Maryland, you know, we'll focus on them a little bit just because, you know, when I'm watching this, that's what I'll be watching, is to see the Terrapins for IU play them next week. You know, like you said, they're just trying to get out of the season. One thing that I think might play in Indiana's favor, Maryland will have played Penn State, Ohio State, and then Michigan State three straight weeks before they take on Indiana. So when you're dealing with a team that's the Big Ten
East.
It's
the same, yeah.
I think it could just take a physical toll on them that they might be pretty beat up by the time they take on Indiana next week. Maybe that doesn't matter. I don't know. I've never played three Big Ten East opponents back-to-back-to-back personally. So I don't know how that feels, but I'm just guessing it doesn't feel great.
No, and that's where Indiana's bye week came in handy,
yes,
is that they split up some of those Big Ten East games. Next, TJ, we're going to go to Evanston, Purdue at Northwestern. Northwestern got a gift wrap game last week. I think Penn State mismanaged the clock a little bit or a lot.
Yeah.
And Purdue fell flat on their face at home after giving Darryl Hazel a vote of confidence. Usually that's the kiss of death when it comes to coaching positions. But does Purdue have a chance to go up there? Yeah, every time, you know, they said Al Golden is safer now, and he was fired the next day.
Yep.
So, Darryl Hazel got that. What do you see here? Is Purdue the team that beat Nebraska, or is it the team that lost 48-14 at home against Illinois?
Well, I don't think they're quite as bad as they looked against Illinois because they looked really, really atrocious. They gave up almost 400 yards rushing to Illinois, who came into the week as the worst rushing team in the Big Ten. So that was beyond what I expected. I thought Illinois would win that game. I didn't think it would be anything close to that. But I think it's important to remember they beat Nebraska with Nebraska playing with the backup quarterback. There was a former walk-on named Riker Fife. They got five turnovers for Nebraska, four of those which gave them the ball inside of the red zone. And they still only won by 10 points. So, it was good to win over Nebraska. That's impressive. I'm not taking that away from them. But there were extenuating circumstances in that game. The Nebraska that they beat was not the Nebraska that Michigan State lost to. They're just a much different team with Tommy Armstrong than they are with Riker Fife. That's just in my opinion. I don't think that they go to Northwestern to win. I think the Northwestern does what most teams have done against Purdue and just runs the ball on them. Justin Jackson is a very good running back. They also have Solomon Vault and Warren Long, and then Clayton Thorson left the Penn State game in the first half with an injury to his lower body. He is expected to go. He can run the ball as well. So I think Northwestern just keeps the ball on the ground, pounds it on Purdue, and just – Purdue, we'll see if they care about that or not. Against Illinois, they didn't care to stop it.
Yeah, and, it's been a disappointing year in West Lafayette again. TJ, next we move to, Nebraska and Rutgers. It's another traditional Big Ten rivalry.
Oh, yeah.
Kidding. But That game's at 3:30 on BTN. Rutgers is, I think, a totally different animal without Leonte Carew. I think that, you know, they're a real solid team with him on offense. Without him, they just lack that big play receiver and that game changer. Nebraska is still in the bowl hunt. They need to win out to get there, I believe. And we'll see. You know, it's Nebraska's traveling east. I expect there to be a decent Nebraska crowd at Rutgers. They usually travel well. I don't know how many Nebraska alums are in New York, but I assume that all the Nebraska alums in the New York City area will be either tailgating or attending the game. So we'll see. You know, it's a game where they have all the momentum. They're coming off a win, a controversial win, but a win over Michigan State, a much-needed win over Michigan State. And Rutgers is coming off a shellacking to Michigan last week. So what are some of the things you see here? Do you see Rutgers pulling an upset, or are these teams like pretty evenly matched and it's going to be a good game?
I have no clue what to expect from Rutgers, from Nebraska. They are still mathematically alive for a bowl game after the disastrous season that they've had. You know, a win here at Rutgers, which they're favored to get, and then they get 13 days off, and then Black Friday they take on the Iowa Hawkeyes. So they have a chance to spoil Iowa's season and get themselves to a bowl game if they can win on Saturday. So that would be a pretty good game, and that will be in Lincoln. So that's a final hurdle for the Iowa Hawkeyes in the regular season, maybe, if they're still unbeaten. That'll be a crazy atmosphere in Memorial Stadium that they don't often get to play spoiler to somebody's college football playoff hopes, but that would be a case where they could. So I don't know. I think Nebraska will take care of business. You say that Rutgers is a different animal without Carew. They definitely are. I wonder what animal this iteration of Rutgers is. Some type of like radioactive swamp rat, or
it is New Jersey after all. So
yeah, like a wounded feral cat. I don't know, but whatever kind of animal the current swamp rat, are we going with that?
We're going with the state animal of New Jersey is the radioactive swamp rat.
Yeah. And that, you know, they beat IU, so I'm not slamming their program. I'm just saying the current state of Rutgers football, not pretty at all. And if they're an animal, they're something that is wounded and decaying, and probably some type of carcass. So radioactive swamp rat it is.
You still don't want to stub your toe on it because it's radioactive and it might get you. And we learned that with IU. But last game is another great trophy game, Florida-Rosedale game, Minnesota at Iowa.
Pig.
Play for the pig. It's awesome. So we'll see. Iowa's coming off, you know, they're riding high. They're at fifth in the college football playoffs. They're coming off a win where they survived in Bloomington. And, you know, they're now 9-0 for the second time in program history. So, you know, we'll see if they could put all of that behind them and focus on Minnesota, who will be up for the rivalry game. I think they just announced either today or last week that Tracy Clays will be the head coach going forward into the future. I think they're going to take the interim tag off. But, you know, we saw how hard they played against Michigan for the little brown jug. So they'll be ready to go, and it's a tough game for both teams.
Yeah, I mean they played Michigan tough. They gave Ohio State a game. So Minnesota, I don't think much changes for their program really under Tracy Clays. It's going to probably be the entire same staff just staying there, and then maybe adding a couple of bodies to replace guys to get promoted. But that's off-season discussion for now. I think Iowa's the better team. I expect them to probably win by something like 7 to 10 points, because that's kind of what they've done here recently, is just get things done and move up when other teams lose. So good for them. They're having a dream season, and hopefully someday we'll get to experience that kind of thing.
Yep. Well, TJ, we are out of time. Thanks for joining me. It's always a pleasure talking Big Ten football. The season has gone by too fast. I saw that TJ has his game day primer out. If you want to know all about the Michigan-Indiana game, check out HoosierHuddle.com. TJ, great work as usual, and have a pleasant rest of the Wednesday.
Yeah, I found Harbaugh doing push-ups and appeared to be coaching a walrus. So
nice. You know, that adds to his list of crazy things he's done.
Yeah, so I thought I'd put that up there, and no explanation needed. I don't know what he's doing. He probably doesn't either, but he's having a good time and making things happen for Michigan. It'll be interesting to see how many times he gets shown on the sideline during the game. I'm guessing the over-under is roughly every 30 seconds.
That would be a good, fun prop bet. But anyway, that does it for this week's show. I want to thank all the veterans. It is Veterans Day, so thank you to the veterans for your service and sacrifice and dedication. Appreciate it. We all at Hoosier Huddle appreciate it. We couldn't do what we do without your sacrifice and service. So thank you, veterans. Keep coming back for HoosierHuddle.com for all our Michigan game and senior day coverage. I did talk to a few seniors yesterday, so we'll have that up later in the week. Anyway, TJ, final home game, and we'll see you on Monday, hopefully.
Yeah, thanks a lot, everybody. Have a good week, and go Hoosiers.
All right, that does it for our show today. Michigan, Indiana, 3:30. It's an ABC ESPN2 mirror game. You could also find it on the IU Sports Radio Network. So we'll wish you a happy Wednesday and a happy Veterans Day and a happy Senior Day on Saturday. So we'll see you on Monday for a wrap-up show, and then we'll close out the regular season with two road games at Maryland and at Purdue. Thanks for listening.
There's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing!
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel. It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
I want to tell you a story. It's a story about a scandal, broken relationships, gossip, rumors, money, corporate rivalry, and a broom. A performance-enhancing broom. My name is John Cullen. I'm a comedian, podcaster, and for 20 years, I was a semi-professional curler. And I want to tell you the story about how a single broom almost imploded the 500-year-old sport of curling.
We felt like we were bringing a knife to a gunfight.
It's the story of a superstar and his fall from grace.
Well, I was being dragged through the mud.
It's the story of two brother entrepreneurs with a dream.
I said, that's great news.
It's a story of intrigue.
I still don't understand why we want to keep his name secret.
The full story has never been told, so I'm going to tell it. Broomgate, how a broom almost killed curling.
It was a year I'd like to forget.
To listen to Broomgate, search for Broomgate in your favorite podcast app. That's all one word, Broomgate.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.